Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
You're all very welcome back from Brains to Barbie, because with Greta Gerwig's Barbie film starring Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling hitting the big screen on July 21st, the anticipation has reached fever pitch. The film's production designer, Sarah Greenwood, even said that the world ran out of pink during construction of Barbie Land and life-size versions of the doll's dream house. But what is it about this bouffant-haired all-American dream doll that has kept us fascinated for the past 64 years? Life in plastic, is it fantastic as it looks? Here to discuss the appeal of the High Priestess of Pink and poor old Ken are Dr. Jamie Sarris, Associate Professor in the Department of Anthropology at Maynooth University, and disability activist and out-and-out Barbie fan Alana O'Neill Murray. You're very, very welcome, and look at you, Alana, in your beautiful bright pink, channeling your inner Barbie this morning. Jamie, I'm going to start with you, not in pink, but bring us back to the beginning. She first appeared in 1959. Nice. Sort of, was she the product of a sort of then consumerist boom?
She was actually a new kind of thing. She was actually created in Wisconsin and then kind of moved to El Segundo, the Mattel Corporation in Southern California. It was kind of an interesting cusp because not only, you know, Barbie's made of plastic and plastic itself is starting to emerge as a kind of a symbol and material basis of consumer society. So the first credit card comes out in 1958. And, you know, that's made of plastic. It's made of exactly the same plastic, vinyl chloride, you know, polyvinyl chloride, the same plastic that gives the new smell, new car smell. And so that part of it is you know, many commentators have pointed out. The other thing, of course, is that, you know, Barbie embodied from the beginning all of these contradictions. She's sexy, but not sexual, you know, in the same way that she shops, but she never gets into financial trouble. She sort of
who is that girl?
she kind of skirts the tensions of consumer capitalism,
which is a lot of cultural baggage to put on a little 11-inch tall plastic doll. But whatever about her not getting into financial trouble, she has, like, I mean, she accounts for a third of Mattel's $5 billion in annual sales.
And that's been consistent. You know, that's like, you know,
for all you Barbie
decades.
Skeptics out there, I will not have a bad word said about it. But she is, isn't she, Jamie? She's a polarizing figure for those reasons, because she straddles those kind of cultural contradictions.
Well, feminism, though, has had these waves. I mean, first wave feminism, for sure, that was a sort of statement. I'm not a Barbie doll. You know, I'm not here to dress up for you. I'm not in there. Later feminism, you know, has you know, kind of more complex relationship. And you really see that in the new film. If you know, Gerwig and Robbie are both, you know, talking about, you know, like, this is a film if you love Barbie, and this is a film if you hate Barbie.
There's something there for everyone. Alana, Jimmy's right there. Like, Barbie, for a long time, has also been used as a derogatory term. She's a Barbie doll. It's another way of saying somebody is a bimbo, perhaps. So for some very negative connotations, has feminism, has it tried to learn to navigate and embrace Barbie? Is she the every doll? Can she be the every doll?
I definitely think she is, you know, like, particularly, say, the likes of, like, TikTok. Like, bimbos have come back in a big way.
In a good way?
In a really good way.
Okay.
There is a massive and growing kind of bimbo movement that really embraces, you know, femininity. Like, there was one who is a self-confessed bimbo, but also in Princeton. So, you know, the idea of a bimbo and the idea of, you know, it's just hyper feminine. And I think that
I'm not apologizing for it.
Yeah. And the big thing is that what Barbie, I mean, for me,
What was your first Barbie? When did you get her?
My first Barbie was, I actually got my first Barbie when I was in Crumlin Hospital. I was in for Christmas. And a certain celebrity was doing walks of the ward and was giving out presents, as he does every year. And I was given this Barbie train. And it was the most amazing thing that I had ever, you know, experienced in my life. Like, here I was, surrounded by machines, wires, and I had this pink train that was, I suppose, a symbol of, like, normality. And, like, a symbol of, it really gave me my identity back. Because, you know, when you're in hospital, you're wearing gowns. And it kind of, it strips you, I suppose, of your personality, really. Like, you stop being a person, you become a patient. Whereas Barbie gave me back.
And she has changed over the years, hasn't she? You know, some on the right would say, oh, she's become woke. But she has adapted to the realities of other people's lives, their circumstances, their ability, disability, everything. They've tried to spread her around quite a bit, Alana, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like in the new film, like there's a trans Barbie played by Harry Neff. And, you know, in particular, this, like, you know, the woke agenda is actually just, you know, giving people their basic human rights. And I think, you know, the inclusion of figures like Harry Neff, Issa Rae, you know, like America Ferrera, who wouldn't have been in a Barbie film if it wasn't for I was saying before this program that Barbie couldn't have happened 10 years ago. Like, the film couldn't have happened 10 years ago because we weren't ready for Barbie. And it couldn't have happened, you know, with a director other than Greta Gerwig, because she has this ability to tell complex female stories.
And it is, isn't it, Jamie, a complex female story, because the image of Barbie that has endured is the 11-inch tall, the blonde, the perfect body. And there is still a parental concern around Barbie and beauty standards. Some of my friends will not give their children them because they hate that kind of the girls in pink and the boys in blue, and yeah. Girls must play with these toys and boys must play with those toys, and it sort of infuriates them. Is that parental concern kind of?
Well, there's a couple. I would just like to step one step back, and, you know, Barbie arguably doesn't just reflect where the culture is. In some ways, she anticipates it. So, for example, the first black Barbie came out in 1980, and Vanessa Williams won Miss America in 1983 as the first black woman to win that. And people forget just how, you know, badly some parts of white America took that. The first presidential Barbie came out in the early 1980s, and Geraldine Ferraro was the vice presidential candidate in 1984. So there is a certain kind of level of...
She is a pathfinder.
She is
ahead of the cultural
A manifester, you might say. But even within those broad kind of strokes, like, there will be a culture war, fight about trans Barbie. And on one side, there's a complete irony of it because, let's face it, all Barbies don't have bits. So, you know, it's kind of a strange idea, you know, on the face of it. But I think underneath there is a broader, you know, kind of question there about what becomes visible in the culture.
Why is she endured, Jamie? Because she's seen of many of her rivals, including, I don't know, Bratz and other sort of, you know, things. Why is she still standing in her stiletto shoes?
Well, actually, her peak is actually, she has a, I can't remember the exact, it's Pantone pink 129ers. She has her own official kind of shade, you know, that
which is why the word ran out of it. Which is why the word ran out of it.
But I think part of the complex things tend to survive, and I think the fact that there are both of these things, there is a very cogent critique about body positivity and questions of you know what that sort of pressure does to young girls. It's certainly, I think, been overtaken by much more serious worries about social media and the things that are available 24/7 in terms of images that make the concern about Barbie seem almost quaint, you know, in some ways by comparison. But at the same time, there's this other much more empowering
And isn't she, Alana, this like aspirational figure? For all of the Barbie outfits I had, the one I most enjoyed was sticking her back into the ball gown and the big kind of the puffy shoulders and everything. But is she a fantasy, or, like, I mean, in one sense, we're sort of laughing, but at the same time, it is this enduring sort of cultural figure through the medium of toys. Is she an aspirational figure, or is that a lot of pressure to put on a plastic doll?
I think it is. It can be both. You know, like, you can aspire to be more like Barbie, but like, say, the likes of Mattel and their Dream Gap project, you know, with Barbie, like, for example, they released a Judge Barbie when they found out that the amount of judges in the States, women made up less than 33% or something. So like, they are taking those steps to empower people and empower everyone. You know, like, I don't see Barbie as a gendered toy. Anyone can be Barbie. Anyone can play with Barbie. Like, that's what makes her so...
And is it that visibility piece, Jamie? Because for young children, but particularly for young girls, it is so important to have role models, even if it is in the form of a plastic doll. But Barbie kind of says is, I can do this.
Yeah, that's...
You can do this.
That is Mattel's thing. You know, you can be anybody. But I think that's, it's easy.
I'd love if Mattel could give me your figure.
I know that's the thing. There's a limit to plastic, I guess. But that whole kind of... I mean, there's a whole question we could ask about plastic surgery, which actually starts to democratize about the same time as Barbie comes on the scene. But that to one side...
I'm jesting, of course. Yeah, but I think the point I'm trying to make is that... Even for a doll and the range and everything else that comes with it, here is a symbol of achievability that has a universal appeal, no matter what clothes you put her in.
And there's a real, there is a very non-trivial substrate to that, because you can actually chart this in changes in popular culture. So, for example, there is something I work in and around medical school issues, and one of my hats, and there's something called the Dana-Scully effect. And from about the mid to late 1990s, female medical school applications rocketed, and they grew most dramatically in what was a completely male-dominated part of the discipline at one time, which was pathology. And that's because they were watching every week The X-Files, and there was this very good-looking, very smart, you know. And so that there's a, you know, you have to see it to actually kind of envisage it, you know, to believe that you could be it. But you can really trace this in a very material way, you know, not just in the culture, but fundamental changes in shifts of power in society.
Well, speaking of that, fundamental shifts of changes of power in society, Alana, at a time when we are talking about crises in male identity, in masculinity, in all of those things, can we afford to have her sidekick, this accessory who Ken, we need to talk about Ken, who doesn't seem to have any obvious role model in life. You know, the boyfriend she didn't need, you know, he was sort of tacked on as an afterthought. Is he becoming problematic in the debates that are happening outside of Mattel's factories?
Absolutely not, because I think, you know, having...
They call him a himbo.
Yeah. That is a male bimbo, for anyone who doesn't know what a himbo is.
But it's an inverted stereotype.
It is. And, you know, the idea of having the man as the tack on is really revolutionary, because for so long, women have taken the back seat to men, you know. And like, Jackie Kennedy was only associated with John F. Kennedy, like, and really
until much later when she was considered in her own right.
Yeah, like, but nobody would have paid her attention if without John F. Kennedy, you know, at the time, because that was the landscape. It was all about men. So having, you know, particularly like Ryan Gosling, you know, like, he's, you know, a heartthrob, a leading man, to have him like sit in the back, and in particular like on this kind of press tour, like, he's really gotten into it, and he's gotten into, like, Ken, you know, like, he was doing an interview on a red carpet once, and he said...
Not a pink one.
or a pink one. And he said, you know, you are Kenuff. And because, like, enough, but Ken. And, like, little things like that, like, just the idea of, like, the playfulness, like, it really turns everything on its head. And I think, you know, the idea of like, oh, like, we don't have masculine, you know, figures or whatever, like, it's ridiculous. And I think it's very kind of...
Well, I'm going to assume you, Alana, are going to be getting tickets for this film. But Jamie, just to ask you, it's a $100 million budget. It's a a lot of hype, yeah, a lot of pink. Yeah. And I'm just wondering, do you think it could be a risky move for Mattel? Could it backfire?
Oh, I don't. I mean, there's a bigger cultural question that, you know, how Hollywood has become kind of, you know, self-cannibalizing, you know, and these toy IPs are the next kind of creative, you know, and you've seen in the Transformers.
The juggernauts.
You know, and Mattel is positioning itself there. But I think this is a can't-miss thing. And, you know, as far as the thing, I mean, I've only seen the trailers, but I think the Gerwig's kind of sense of its epicalness is, the trailer that I saw is you know, taking 2001 A Space Odyssey, Kubrick's thing, where, you know, a new doll is the monolith, and these girls and cave girls are, you know, breaking their own old baby dolls and seeing this, seeing Margot in all her glory, you know, kind of striding
out. I cannot
out.
Wait. I was wearing them yesterday, but I have my pink stilettos on standby, and I will be going to see Barbie in all of her glory and contributed to help pay down some of that big 100 million euro budget. But for now, Dr. Jamie Sarris, Associate Professor in the Department of Anthropology at Maynooth University, and Alana O'Neill Murray, Disability Activist and absolute out and out Barbie fan. Thank you very, very much to you both for joining us. And we're going to take a quick break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.